Let's Talk About is recorded and produced in Treaty 1 territories, on the original lands of the Anishinaabe, Cree, Oji-Cree, Dakota, and Dene peoples, and on the homeland of the Métis Nation. Thank you very much for listening. Slowly, and I mean slowly, working our way out of a polar vortex here in Manitoba. We've had extreme cold warnings, as many of you listening know, for about a week now. It's currently, as I'm recording this, it's minus 24. It's supposed to go down up to minus 16 tomorrow, and getting up to 1 degree, 1 and 3 degrees. On Sunday and Monday of next week, which is absolutely wild to go from, you know, being so cold it hurts your face to stand outside to being warm enough where you could go outside in a sweater and jeans and not really feel a difference. But I mean, it is February, and as February turns to March, we tend to see things warm up. But this extreme seesaw of back and forth, cold and warmth, got me thinking. I did a bit of reading because it's something that I haven't really studied since I was a kid. Anybody who knows me knows I was extremely interested in global warming when I was a kid, to a point where we had a copy of An Inconvenient Truth for so long, we just wound up buying it off Blockbuster. They actually gave us the copy that we had because we paid so much for it. And it got me thinking, because when it is this cold, when it's minus 30, minus 40 here in Winnipeg, often the joke becomes, what happened to global warming? I thought it was supposed to get warmer. And I bite my tongue when I hear that, because I just think, okay, global warming doesn't mean that it's going to be plus 30 every winter. That's not what it means. It means a 1 to 2 to 3 degree rise in overall global temperatures, and that throws off literally everything. But I decided that, you know, maybe it'd be a good day to kind of sit down and talk to you all about it. More specifically today, I wanted to talk about two topics that often get left behind when people talk about climate change. I'm going to use the term climate change because global warming is an aspect of climate change, but climate change is more descriptive for what's going on, and is also more descriptive for what we're talking about right now. In the consequences of writing my book, it's a topic, they're both topics that I've explored a little bit, not a little bit, a lot. And one is going to directly impact Winnipeg, and it is actually impacting us right now as a polar vortex has descended upon us. And those are the issues of extreme temperature shifts and desertification. I'm going to start with desertification because it's a little bit simpler, and I think it is extremely important to know because Canada does technically have some desert, but it's really going to impact the continental U.S. It's going to impact Mexico. It's going to impact basically most of Africa. Basically anywhere where there is a desert or something close to a desert will become a desert at some point due to climate change. So how does desertification actually work? In broad terms, desertification means, and this definition is taken from the United Nations Convention on to Combat Desertification, means land degradation in arid, semi-arid, and dry subhuman areas resulting from various factors, including climatic variations and human activities. So, effectively what happens in desertification is two major issues. First, temperatures rise to a point, and we're seeing this rise happening in sub-Saharan Africa. We're seeing it happen in Mexico because of a consequence of climate change. Temperatures overall, average temperatures, are rising to a point where precipitation does not take hold. So these areas, these arid, semi-arid areas, between 5 to 65% of the water that they have that comes from rainfall is lost to evaporation and transpiration. So evaporation, obviously, everyone knows what evaporation is sun comes down, heats up the earth, and turns water into water vapor, and it rises up to the sky. Transpiration is where water leaches into the surface and is lost, and it dissipates into the surface and goes towards vegetation. So any surface moisture that's left that doesn't evaporate just disperses into the ground and is lost. So it's not able to be used, and it dries up. Obviously, you don't reach a point of saturation in Winnipeg, and really all of Manitoba. When it rains, it hits the ground, and you can walk around, and the ground is squishy and wet. And when you step on the grass, water comes up, and it pools around your foot because there is so much excess moisture that the ground is saturated, and more of it collects on the top. So the ground has enough water that it can actually sustain vegetation and retain some moisture. In these arid and semi-arid areas, temperatures rise so much that this breakdown, this evaporation and transpiration, are so quick. Not enough is left for transpiration from evaporation that it all dissipates into the ground and vegetation starts to die. Soil starts to break down because, if you don't really know, soil is organic matter and it requires some degree of moisture. So if it doesn't get enough moisture, it starts to break down. It's when you get that kind of crusty dirt, and it loses all of its nutrients, so it's not able to sustain life. So what's happening with desertification on this end is more and more areas of the world are losing ground moisture, are losing their ability to retain moisture, and are turning to hard, kind of dusty dirt and sand. So the other part that causes desertification is the expansion of deserts. Deserts are already there. These big rolling sand dunes have been deserts for millions of years. What happens with desertification, and you'll see this kind of on a dry, if you've ever been out in rural Manitoba on a really dry day, and the wind blows across the prairies, and it kicks up a lot of dust, it kicks up a lot of dirt, it kicks up a lot of, you know, a lot of debris, and it just carries it along in the sky. You can see these little swells of dust, these little cyclones that rip up and kind of dissipate. The same kind of phenomena happens in deserted areas, and it causes dust storms and sandstorms. Actually, in the 1920s, we had the Dust Bowl, which was this period of extreme drought in North America where we had these extreme dust storms that kicked up and really buried homes and they buried farms and they just kind of swept across the prairies and wiped out a lot of usable land. And eventually we were able to get some of that land back through a lot of effort. But this is happening around the world right now in areas that cannot reclaim it. So part of desertification is winds blow sand, and the great thing about vegetation, and vegetation is extremely important to this whole process, is vegetation breaks up wind. It stops wind, it catches the sand. So, you know, if you're standing, you know, if you're trying to get out of the wind, what do? You hide behind something, you stand behind a tree. This is something that we're seeing in North America on farmland. When trees are cut down, wind just blows across more land because they don't have the trees and the vegetation to break up that wind. And it just carries that dust, and it carries the dust and it carries the sand in desertification into these areas where it wasn't before. It literally blows the desert into populated areas. And because of loss of vegetation, because of lack of ground moisture, this, you know, lack of ground moisture means less vegetation can be sustained. So vegetation dies off, and that means more dust can be blown in because there's nothing to stop it. And that spreads out the desert. And then it leads to more ground warming because, you know, the desert sands are very hot and it warms up the ground. And then that means, you know, more moisture lost to evaporation and even less for transpiration, which further hampers the ability to provide moisture to plants, to sustain vegetation, to sustain that barrier to wind and dust. So this is going to get worse. This is getting worse already, but it's going to get worse if we don't do something about it. And it's a major issue, and it's actually going to impact the prairies in a very real way. In, you know, parts of the prairies may turn to desert because of this lack, you know, in the summers, and we know in the summers, it gets extremely, extremely hot now. Luckily in Manitoba, we have a lot of moisture around us because we are, we have lots of lakes and waterways in Manitoba, so there is a lot of ground moisture. But that doesn't mean that it's going to stop it forever. You know, Western Manitoba, around Brandon and Portage, and you know, you've got farmland there. You've got the extension of the prairies that bleeds into Manitoba, and it's really going to hit Alberta hard. It's really going to hit Saskatchewan hard because Saskatchewan, as the joke goes, is very flat, so the winds can blow across. Alberta, you know, Saskatchewan was just destroyed by the Dust Bowl, and this is an issue that's going to hit Canada. We're going to start seeing more evaporation, less transpiration, or more transpiration, sorry, and increased desertification. Land is going to be less usable because it is going to turn to desert in Canada. You think about Canada, you don't think about desert. But it's going to happen here. Now, something that's going to extremely impact and is impacting us right as I'm recording this at 10:36 in the morning on Monday, it's hampering us right now, is extreme temperature shifts. With global warming, it does not mean that your temperature is going to rise. Climate change doesn't mean that the day-to-day temperature is going to be, you know, warmer. It's going to cause tectonic shifts in climate. Climate being the overall ebb and flow of temperature, of moisture, of weather. It's kind of the broad strokes. We live in, you know, we don't live in an arid climate. We don't live in an equatorial climate. We live in a temperate climate. And it's going to shift our climate in very dangerous ways because everything in the ecosystem of Manitoba, of Saskatchewan, of Alberta, of Ontario, of Canada in general, has been set up over millennia and has been near constant for thousands and thousands of thousands of years. So all of the ecosystems, all the animals, all the plant life is all used to living with a specific set of circumstances. You know, the same reason why in the UK people evolved to have bleached white skin, because there wasn't a lot of sun. So you didn't need to, you know, that changed the actual DNA, and people responded and lived in a place where there was no sunlight, so they became physically lighter. Happened all across Europe, because Europe doesn't get a lot of sun. It gets a lot of sun, but it's a whole lot, host of other factors I'm not getting into today. But as you know, as a country, as a nation, as a landmass, we evolved. We being Canada in general, as a whole, as a not as a sociopolitical entity, but as a physical biological entity, Canada evolved to exist in a certain climate within a certain set of circumstances. And climate change is now throwing that off. So what does this mean for what's going on right now with the polar vortex? Well, usually, polar vortexes always exist. The polar vortexes, as the name implies, sit at the poles. So usually, you know, for thousands of years, this has been the case. The polar vortex has swirled around, you know, the North Pole, around Greenland, that whole area, and the jet stream that it generates has, you know, swung around the Earth and been privy to the ebbs and flows with air pressure, low fronts, high fronts, and moving across as air pressure changes across kind of the continental North America. But that polar vortex has remained pretty stable until now. This is something that they don't talk to you about when you're in school. This is not something that they talk about on the news when they talk about climate change. They usually talk about rising sea levels. This is going to be incredibly, incredibly dangerous. So as you know, polar ice caps are melting. The North Pole is getting smaller. The ice mass is getting smaller and smaller every year. And as it gets smaller, that white and, you know, anybody who's been outside in a black t-shirt knows this. Darker colors absorb more electromagnetic or more light. And by more light, we mean more energy. And by more energy, we mean more heat. So the white surface of, you know, the polar ice sheet was really great, because the color white does not absorb any light. It just bounces it right off. So the polar ice sheet was great, because it would just bounce the light off, and the energy would dissipate back and it would fly out through the atmosphere. When we had the hole in the ozone, it would just fly straight out, and it wouldn't contribute to anything. Now with greenhouse gases, those lights, those rays of those beams of solar energy are being captured in the atmosphere, and it's causing this greenhouse effect. Everybody knows this. Everyone's seen an Inconvenient Truth. But it's starting to speed up because the polar ice sheets are starting to melt. That's throwing excess carbon into the air, because carbon is captured in ice. This is how we measure historical levels of carbon, is by boring these holes into the ice and pulling out these boreholes, these long beams, basically, these long rounded poles of ice. And we can measure, based on the air pockets and the carbon contained in those air pockets, what the carbonation levels of the atmosphere were when that air bubble was frozen into the ice, in what particular year it was. So as the ice sheets melt, those bubbles pop open and the carbon gets released into the atmosphere. Also, you're exposing more of this rich blue ocean. Blue is a very dark color, and it absorbs all. It's really in the far end of the light spectrum, the visible light spectrum, and it absorbs a lot of light. It absorbs a lot of light, a lot of energy. So that's causing the oceans around the ice sheets to get even warmer. and it's causing more melting, which is causing more ocean to be available to warm up. And it's just speeding up this cycle over and over and over again. What this means for the polar vortex is, as many of you will know, warm air rises. So we've got this cold mass of the polar vortex that sits and it spins around the North Pole and then, you know, around like the northern Europe and Russia and Canada, and it swirls around kind of high up. And it causes this cold front. It is a low pressure. Because it's cold, it's low pressure. And what it's been stable for a long time. But what this warm air does, it comes up and it pushes the cold air out of the way. So if you know what wind is, you know, you've got basically wind, you've got warm air rising, and it rises up, and the air molecules that are warmer, they rise up, and that forces the colder air molecules down, and it moves, it kind of causes this shifting cycle of air, and it pushes those cold ones down, and they go towards the earth, and they blow across, and that creates wind. It's the changing air pressure. So wind isn't some like magical fairy dust, it's changing air pressure. And the pressure is like a valve, and it, you know, it needs to get let off, so the air turns into wind. So what global warming or what climate change is doing, by, you know, the polar ice sheets melting and the air in the North Pole warming up, it's pushing more warm air into the atmosphere, and it's dispersing the polar vortex. The polar vortex isn't a disc anymore. It's splayed out, and it swirls and sways in different ways. And right now, I'm gonna leave a link to a Forbes article on this in the show notes. But it's extremely complicated, and I'm not a geographer. I'm not a meteorologist by any stretch. But I can understand big words, and I understand a bit of science. It's dissipating and it's changing the way the polar vortex functions. And now, where the polar vortex would have sat over Nunavut and bits of the Northwest Territories and the Yukon, because those are the highest latitude areas in Canada, it's now broken up and it's shifting around, and the polar vortex is covering parts of like southern Europe and parts of more of Russia, and it's going into the oceans. It's covering huge swaths of North America. And it's bringing this massive, massive amount of cold air. As it moves, it causes this cold air to just wash over Canada, which is causing this extreme chill we've been getting, because it's carrying this frigid polar air, and it's bringing it to bear over top of us. And the air was already cold, but this cold air forces its way in, because we don't have warm air to push up. The cold air comes down, the cold front comes down and just washes over us, and eventually it'll cycle back, and it's moving because the polar vortex moved in a circle, kind of following the spin of the earth. It's going to start cycling, and you know, the polar vortex is going to cycle away, and it's going to go back to the North Pole, pick up more cold air and come back around. So what it's doing is it has now destabilized, because of warming in the ice sheets, we have now disabled, we have now completely distorted, and it has destabilized our climate. Our climate is changing, guys. It is not supposed to be as warm as it was in January. It's not supposed to be as cold as it is in February. It's supposed to be somewhere in between. What people don't realize about climate change in landlocked areas like the Canadian prairies, aside from desertification, which is going to happen, and that's going to have its own impacts on climate because of, you know, Alberta's got the mountains. So, you know, if you've ever studied weather systems and how they work coming from the ocean, you know, the warm air comes from the ocean, carries all the moisture from the ocean, and as the reason why the Okanagan gets so much rain and BC gets so much rain is because that that heavy, moist air has to carry itself up the Rocky Mountains, and as it gets higher, the air pressure gets denser, and just acts like a sponge, squeezing on a sponge, and it just squeezes out all the moisture. So by the time it gets over the Rocky Mountains towards Alberta, there's nothing left. So that's why Alberta is so dry. But it's also why Alberta has such extreme shifts. It can be extremely hot in the summer and extremely cold in the winter. Same thing here in Manitoba. We can be extremely cold because us, Saskatchewan and Alberta, are in the middle of the continent. We aren't near oceans to carry in moisture. Our temperatures, our climates, are very dry as a, you know, in comparison to everywhere else. So we see huge shifts in temperature. That's why we have extremes. So climate change isn't going to make it overall warmer. It's going to make our extreme temperatures more extreme. Our summers are going to get hotter, but our winters are going to get colder. We're going to see this weird cyclical strangeness. It's not going to be, you know, it's not going to be summer is super, super hot, winter is super cold. It's not going to work like that. Our climate, as we've already seen, is becoming destabilized. We're going to see, you know, maybe a longer summer. Summer is going to carry into it's going to carry into probably September and bits of October. And we're not going to get a full-on winter until probably the end of December, early January, early to mid-January. And then it's really going to hit us in February, like what we've seen, where the polar vortex comes down and washes over us and freezes cars and it drops our temperature to minus 40. It's going to completely change the way that our climate works and the way we respond to it. It's going to make so much of Manitoba so much more difficult to live in. People aren't really supposed to live here to begin with because of just how extreme the temperatures were. Obviously, Indigenous peoples did, and they found a way to live here, but they didn't find a way to live here when anthropogenic climate change has completely destabilized our global climate. So here's what we have to be on the lookout for. And I hasten you to go and research desertification and extreme temperature shifts, because it's extremely interesting if you can get through the hardcore science of it. But as members of the prairie populace, I guess you could say, desertification is coming. These extreme temperature shifts are here. We need to start working to combat these now, because they are only getting worse. We're not going to be able to stop climate change, but we can keep it from utterly destroying us. And that'll do it for today. Thank you very much for listening. This has been a chat on climate change, specifically desertification and temperature shifts in the polar vortex. I've been Jason. You have been the audience. If you're listening live on 101.5 UMFM, keep that dial tuned in to 101.5 UMFM. You've got some great songs, great shows coming up right after this one. And please support your local radio, local journalism. If anything about the last few weeks has shown us that supporting local matters so much more than ever, especially on the radio side, the media side. So please stay tuned in, if not to me, to other people. And if you're listening on Spotify, thank you very much for your download. It means so much to me. If you could leave I don't know if you can rate on Spotify, I've never seen that, but keep downloading, keep following, keep listening. It means the world to me. I've been Jason. You have been the audience. This has been Let's Talk About. Stay warm, wear a mask, and have yourselves a wonderful, wonderful week.